Hey guys, I'm going to give you a recommendation for a series. You probably haven't heard of this series. You probably haven't even don't know what I'm talking about, but it's called The Last Dance. I know. You're like, what is that? It's a behind the scenes look at the Chicago Bulls dynasty of the 90s. It continues this Sunday at 9 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Seriously, even though you're like, why would I watch this? No one else is watching it. You know what? That's probably too much.
Really going all in on the bit.
Listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen and Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, which is presented by State Farm and brought to you by AT&T. You can find Jalen and Jacoby wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts forgot to come up with an introduction and the other host is looking at her with plaintive, accusing eyes because this is his moment to shine every podcast. Maybe I'll come up with something later. We are 3 days away from the NFL draft. I have talked about the team needs. I have talked about the prospects. Now, I'm going to make some picks, and joining me in doing so is frequent contributor, regular guest, Mike Golic Jr., whose voice you heard at the top of the show.
Yes. Hey, welcome. I almost welcomed you back to your own podcast. That probably wouldn't work. Thanks for having me back. I'm shook because I'm coming on the heels of, I think, yet another Dominique Foxworth appearance that reminds me that I'm the second class guest in all of this. So
Last week was Spencer Hall, who is tough to top on all things college
sports. My God.
So,
yeah.
Dominique was before that. The Dominique one, it went really long. Don't feel pressure to go long just because he did. I know how guys are. We are doing a mock today, and I've done many mocks. But you and I kind of coordinated beforehand. We went back and forth over text just to, you know, make sure we weren't throwing each other too many curveballs. Although you threw a number of curveballs, by the way, in your mock. You went off script, and I say script being sort of off consensus, extremely quickly, which I appreciate. I wouldn't say extremely quickly, but fairly early on, it gets pretty spicy on the Mike Golic side of this draft.
Yeah, no, listen, we were doing this, and as it was explained to me, it was our mock draft of what we wanted, not necessarily what we thought was going to happen, not what we had seen,
yes,
certainly talked about, and there have been a lot of draft rumors right now in the last week, certainly, but this is about what we want and see, and so I figured, let's get froggy.
Yeah, so we're not trying to predict what's going to happen, and we are not doing trades, I'll add that. We are taking, if we were the GM of the New York Giants, the Detroit Lions, the Seattle Seahawks, who would we take at various positions? So I'm the host, so I went first. Pretty easy. You know, in interest of time management, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about the obvious picks. I am the GM of the Cincinnati Bengals, and I took Joe Burrow. Not a lot to say there, Mike. I feel like Burrow and Young, who you then go on, spoiler alert, take with the second pick, there's not that much to say. They've sort of been overlooked over the course of the draft. Young is a little bit more interesting because, you know, there is a discussion about Tua to be had there for Washington. You know, I think in a post Josh Rosen world, we suddenly look at teams with, you know, first round draft picks at quarterback and we think, yeah, but what if they could upgrade? And I don't think that's unreasonable.
Yeah, no, and it would make sense because similar position, right? You've got a new head coach coming into Washington. Mm-hmm. But the problem is we know that these things tend to be driven by ownership and the hubris associated right with that. And because that was a Dan Snyder pick at quarterback last year and Dwayne Haskins, feels like it's unlikely to be a guy that's going to admit, I got this wrong and start over.
That's a good point. It's also driven by coaching, right? And I think that's something people forget with Arizona is it wasn't like, you know, Steve Kime was like, I must have Kyler. They were, everything that organization did was centered around Cliff Kingsbury last year. And once he came in was when it really started to look like, okay, well, you know, he wants to run the system he wants to run. And we are in a position to get him the perfect quarterback for that system. So we're going to do it. I don't think that's the case with Washington. So it doesn't really, it's just a no brainer for them. The other thing I'll say, we skipped over Burrow. I took Burrow. You took Young. Would you are the GM of Washington, how many picks would it take for you to trade down?
Oof. To trade down, if I'm still trading down and we're talking like the teams that are going to be in range of this, you know, when we talk about the Chargers, mm-hmm, and a few of the teams that are going to be looking to maybe get inside that top five. If you could give me, like, I don't know, if I could get at least a first and maybe like a second in this year, something like that, I would need to see the rest of Washington's picks to see, like San Fran, who's in talks of maybe trading some of their picks, where they might have holes or want to get more picks. But I can be talked into it. Like, it's not like they're not deep along the defensive line, right? Like, this is going to be them adding something that's supposed to be like the Quentin Nelson capstone on an already pretty young and solid unit here that should improve, even if Chase Young is not a part of it in 2020.
Yeah, I think it depends on, like you said, the trade partner. So, like, if you could walk away, if you're Washington, and if you could walk away from this draft with one of Akuda Simmons Brown, you know, like one of the premier defensive picks, and a first round offensive tackle, one of that top five group, I think it becomes worth it, personally.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but beyond that, it gets a little bit hazier, I think. They need a left tackle, right, with Trent Williams potentially gone. So I don't think that's going to happen. I think this is a foregone conclusion. I have yet to see like a serious mock from the likes of the Kuipers and such that has them doing that, but it's an interesting discussion. So I'll come back to three. We're still chalk here. I have the Detroit Lions. I'm taking El Jefe, Jeffrey Okuda. I haven't talked about Okuda on the pod at all, so I want to like take a moment. He's amazing.
Oh, it's one of those things where, like, you know, Dominique Foxworth is our resident defensive back expert around here. Like, I obviously go with what I know on offensive line a lot, but Jeffrey Okuda is one of those guys, and the truly great players usually are. You don't have to know a ton about the position. Like, even if you come in not knowing much, you cut on the tape, you see one in Ohio State's uniform, and you can just see, oh, okay, this guy's different. He sticks with every receiver like glue. He'll actually come up and hit people, which is not a prereq for a defensive back in the NFL. Like, he checks every box possible, and it jumps off the screen. It's awesome to watch.
Yeah, when your comp is like Jalen Ramsey, who is arguably the best DB prospect, you know, in a generation, you're in pretty good shape. People get talk about how good he is in man and how he's a perfect fit for Detroit, but like, it doesn't matter, at least bit to my eye. He can play in any scheme. He can play press. He can play off. Physically, he is perfect. like, I have trouble finding holes, I guess, on him. I'd say maybe the ball skill. I don't know. I think he's the kind of DB who could go first overall in a draft that's not this draft.
No, I'd agree, and I think it's been reflected. Like you talked about, we've almost forgotten discussing Joe Burrow and Chase Young. I think Jeffrey Okuda has been in that same class. Like, it's really been, when you look at, and we'll get to the fourth prospect on our board in a second, but I think when it comes to the top four, these are so above and beyond at their position that they haven't really merited or warranted any discussion in the pre-draft process.
I think the only issue for Detroit is, like, it feels a little like, okay, we just got rid of a star cornerback in Darius Slay, and then we're just replacing him with a star cornerback. Like, how much better is our team going to get? Which is, it doesn't really make sense to me, right? From a roster building perspective, you having a star cornerback on a rookie contract for 4 years is incredible. And he's a can't miss prospect. You know, I'm going to change my negative, by the way. I know I said ball skills are stupid. I think maybe run defense, tackling a little bit sometimes. But he's a no-brainer. Your pick at four, I don't think is a guaranteed. I think this is where the train goes off the rails a little bit. So you're Dave Gettleman. You are in what appears to be an attic, based on the photos I've seen. Someone has hung up a photo of New York skyline behind you. There is Purell and lotion on your desk. You are ready to pick. Who are you taking?
As I dial into the conference call on my rotary phone with the fourth overall pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the New York Football Giants select Isaiah Simmons. I'm going to call him safety out of Clemson, but I understand the positionless nature. But you're right. This is the pain point in the NFL draft here, because by all accounts, and I think you're with me on this, the Giants should be trading down here for someone who is quarterback needy and looking to jump into this. But we know Dave Gettleman in his career as a GM has never traded back in the first round.
So, that's so crazy. So, here's the thing. I'm not going to get into Isaiah Simmons and who he is, because I've just talked about it so much on this podcast, like how I would use him, what his skill set is, how multiple he is, how you can use him to dictate what offenses to do, that kind of thing. I want to talk about him specifically for the Giants, because it's funny. Like, the Dave Gettleman thing to do is not to take the sexy, multiple, versatile defensive player. It's to take either like a Derrick Brown or a left tackle, right? Or a tackle, outside tackle, right, at this position. The thing is, Mike, like, I wouldn't be angry. I mean, I think he should trade down. But if I'm a Giants fan and he actually took an offensive tackle, I'd be like, yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
Well, it would be the smart thing to do, because the experiments that you had going on at tackle for the last few years haven't worked. And the one thing we've talked about with this tackle class especially is its strength is at the top. We're going to see more tackles taken in the top end of the draft than we have in probably 4 years at least. You could maybe even talk about the 2014 draft class for that, but it's a drop-off after that that's pretty severe once you get out of the top five or six guys.
Yeah, if they can trade down, still pick in the top 10 and accrue more picks, then I think they can get one of the two best tackles and then flesh out their defense. And to me, that would be like the optimal outcome for the Giants.
And
but
like,
we're not trading,
No, and all things considered, like, based on who's below them, if they're still inside the top 10 when they trade down, there's a chance that Isaiah Simmons is still there for them at that point, right? Like, the teams that we're talking about in the next few would all be teams, in theory, that start to become part of this weird quarterback market that we know we've got for this draft.
Right, so it's really interesting with Simmons. Once you get past New York, you know, he could go at 7 to the Chargers or the Panthers. I could see him getting past there too, though. It really comes down to team needs. It's like how near the end of the draft, we'll get to, you know, when we get into the 20s, I had trouble, all these like linebackers kept falling just because I kept coming across teams that did not need linebackers, that needed cornerbacks or wide receivers. And I think Simmons could be sort of just victim to team needs.
I think Carolina for me is the only spot I push back. I think if he falls there, that's a no-brainer. Like, you talk about a franchise, and I understand, like, interior D-line is the chief need that we talk about them addressing for this draft, but I think that Isaiah Simmons, especially for them, like, they're a team in transition. You branded Christian McCaffrey as your sort of offensive bedrock on here. I think defense, if you had a guy like that, and I've done phoners for, you know, radio stations in Carolina, and that's their pie in the sky situation. It's like, if this guy somehow drops, could we land Isaiah Simmons and build the future of our defense around the most versatile piece in the draft?
I think he is like football nerd fans of every team who is picking in a top 10 kind of want Isaiah Simmons, even though regardless of whether it makes sense for the franchise. I do agree with Carolina, obviously, with, you know, Luke Kuechly retiring and sort of all the changes they've had there and the rebuilding. It makes a ton of sense for them. But the Giants snapped him up at number 4 in our mock draft. I'm picking for the Miami Dolphins at number 5. And we're back to chalk. Well, not chalk, because over the last few days, Tua Tagovailoa has been dropping. Justin Herbert has been rising. We will talk about Justin Herbert later. He is not drafted for a while in our mock draft. What do you make of those things go hand in hand, right? It's not mutually exclusive necessarily that one rises, one falls or whatnot. Like, Mel Kiper has, I think, Herbert at 5, Tua at 6. But we also are seeing mocks where Tua, like, there was a rumor in Peter King had a column today, his MMQB column, where he talked about the Patriots grabbing him at 13. Can I just say, if the Patriots get Tua at 13, every NFL GM should resign who picks before them, because, or they should pretend like they were hacked and they have to restart the whole draft, which is definitely something I have done before with, like, you know, like when you're playing a game, you're like, oh no, my thing was frozen the whole time. Like, some GM has to take a bullet and stop the draft, because I would be so angry if that actually happens.
Start furiously unplugging everything within reach and just pray to God it reaches the league headquarters. Like, you cannot let that happen. Oh, I just got chills.
Can you imagine him dropping the 13?
But that's not, That's the thing, though, is, Mina, I can, because like you said, I think we underestimate how unprepared some teams are for what we're going through. And to be clear, no one is totally prepared, but the widening of the gap between the haves and have-nots, meaning the good, smart teams that find creative solutions to problems and everybody else, is going to be so wide. And like, the bad teams pick at the top. So one of them is bound to screw this up in the meantime in this area. And because of Tua's injuries and the pandemic that prevented doctors from really getting a clear look at it, we could be in the mood for something like that.
What are the football, setting aside the injury thing, what are the football negatives for Tua in your mind? You know, you've watched a lot of his career. What do you think are the dings on him as a prospect?
I mean, I guess maybe now this kind of goes hand in hand with some of the injury bugs, but at times trying to hold on a little bit too long for the play. Like, you know, there's always that phrase, know when the journey is over, that I hear Trey Wingo say all the time. Like, he's someone that could do well with that. But besides that, like, maybe if you're comparing to Justin Herbert and Jordan Love, like, Tua doesn't have like the natural cannon like those guys have, but I mean, he's such a quick processor. He's got motion like a freaking viper. He's incredibly quick twitch. He does make extended plays. He's good enough to get out of trouble with his feet and maybe pick up some extra yards. Like, the negatives are things you've got to search for in that. Cause overall, I think this is a prospect that everyone has done way too much overthinking on.
Yeah. It's that marriage of being able to play within a scheme. Like, I would see him in like a West Coast offense, ideally, right, in the NFL. And but also having the physical tools to improvise outside of it that make him such a modern prospect. So perfect for today's game. I agree with you about the negatives, the holding on a little bit. You know, he'll occasionally get fooled by like a disguised coverage, but like compared to Herbert, the processing is like, you know, comparing an iMac to a TI-83 or something. Like, it's just not comparable.
And I think what you mentioned there too, Mina, is a great point about iMac. Yeah. that was very Dave Gettleman of you. So congrats. but like what you mentioned about his ability to improvise outside of it, I think also tends to benefit the teams that wind up at the top. Like, bad teams earn their way to the top of the draft usually by not protecting the quarterback very well. Yeah. And what did we see with Kyler last year in Arizona? I get it. He took a lot of sacks, but he also got them out of a lot of trouble. And that's one thing that Tua offers you in a way that Justin Herbert flat out does not right now.
Yo, that's the other. We're going to talk about Herbert later. And so I went back. I watched a lot of Justin Herbert this weekend because I was like, you know what? I want to feel doubly, because I watched a fair amount of him just from watching Pac-12, but I want to feel doubly certain of what I'm seeing, you know. That offensive line was great.
Yes.
That's something, like, the rest of the offense is trash, and I'll talk about that. But he played behind a good offensive line. Okay. So it's not like one of those things where you can point to his college career and say, well, he wasn't protected. Like, we'll get to Jordan Love. You know, dude had time. And like you said, if he's in a situation where he doesn't, all of those bad tendencies, like, can you imagine how much worse they could be?
Oh, it is. It would only get amplified. So yeah, I know we'll spend time on that later, but you're right. I think that jumped off to both of us for sure.
All right. Let's get weird. Number six. The Los Angeles Chargers. Tom Telesco Golic Jr. is picking up his futuristic. He has like a high-tech setup, which isn't too surprising. And he's taking
Jordan Love out of Utah State, quarterback.
Okay, just walk me through the process for this one, because this is obviously where things, this is a wild pick.
Yeah, so and so much of the discussion publicly lately has been certainly about Herbert and Tua and what version of them go in these two spots. But if I'm looking this and saying what I want, and I know this has been the bet this year with Todd McShay and Mel Kiper Jr., is who goes first amongst Herbert and Love in a lot of this one. Todd is firmly team Love, and Mel is team Herbert on this one. I just look at it and say all the things that we talked about just now and are going to talk about with Herbert, I know what are there, and he's a very safe pick, right? He looks the part. He does all those things. He's got a great arm, but he did operate in largely favorable circumstances. And every time I watched him and every time I tuned into a game for Herbert, and Oregon had a bunch of good nationally televised one, I walked in remembering the guy I saw a couple years ago that blew me away with arm talent and limited shots. And I was like, oh man, that could be something. And every game I watched his, I left going, huh, all right, well, that was okay. Like, I always was underwhelmed watching a Justin Herbert-led Oregon team. And I look at that on the other side and I go, all right, yeah, Jordan Love's, tape this year wasn't quite the blow-you-away tape from 2018 that jumped him up on so many people's maps. But I know he's got a cannon for an arm. I know he can improvise a little bit better. And I feel like there's better football ahead and more favorable conditions for him. And so I just looked at that and said, you know what? If I'm going to take the upside play for the guy with the physical tools, I'm more comfortable going with him than the guy that I feel like I've been consistently underwhelmed by in Herbert.
Did Love run a faster 40 than Herbert?
That I'm not sure.
Did Justin Herbert even run it? Actually, he might not have ran it, but
he might. And Justin Herbert can move.
Well,
can
that's scoot. What I was just about to say. A lot of people are going to talk about like Love being the more mobile guy, and that's just not true. Based on again, like what? Like I think that's frankly the biggest difference. We keep being like we're going to talk about Herbert, and then like we talk about him. I actually think he's a better mover than Love or Tua, quite frankly. Spicy take there. But but you're right. I mean, Love is a bet. Choosing Love, that name, it's a bet on the idea that he can learn how to play quarterback. That's really it, right? It's a bet on the notion that he can learn not to lock onto reads and make terrible decisions and be overconfident in his hilarious, and I keep using the adjective hilarious because that's what it is, arm talent. I don't know. Like, maybe. The Chargers are a good situation because he doesn't have to play. Right? They've got Tyrod.
I think that's a huge part of it. Like, it's the room you're going into. Like, if you're talking about learning the craft, someone who has been certainly judicious taking care of the football in the way that Tyrod always has. And yes, Tyrod's much more mobile than Love, I think, at this point. But as far as what they do as pocket passers, I think it's an interesting case study for how you can mimic. And I think we underrate how much a quarterback room that you come into matters when it comes to rookie quarterbacks and the ability to wean them into the offense.
Totally. And there's like Tyrod's like the nicest, most mentory type of quarterback. His backups always have said, and it also like, Baker Mayfield told me that when he came into Cleveland, right? And he was playing behind him at first. Like everybody loves being around him. By the way, Tyrod, sneaky great deep arm. To me, like both Herbert and Love are equally rolls of the dice. I know that the NFL doesn't see it that way. So if I'm going to roll the dice, I would be more inclined to roll it on Love, even though I think the percent chance of him becoming a viable NFL starter is not great, but it is, I don't think Love's is better. That's what I'll say. So the Chargers, given the fact that they clearly are going for a QB and are, having not gone for Cam or Jameis, it makes sense to me that they would, like this pick to me, I wouldn't be angry about it necessarily. I think I would at 6, so. Like I would probably hope to trade down in it, but that's neither here nor there.
Another interesting one if they become in the market for trading up and potentially trying to go after Tua. Like this is where the dogfight really is.
Yeah, it's all the draft. The way I see it, there are like three interesting, super spicy points. And by the way, Mike Gold Jr. The rest of last year's draft show, we're going to be putting out videos, so you'll see our reactions to these picks and some of these interesting points on draft night. But there's 3, 4, 5, 6, right? What happens with Tua, Herbert, and Love. Then there's the wide receiver clump, which we'll get to around like 11, 12, and whether or not teams leapfrog to get to the guy they want, which I think is totally plausible. And then you get into the late 20s, where I think you might see another run on a second quarterback or something. Those strike me as the moments when like crazy stuff could go down.
Absolutely. The wide receivers get very interesting in our draft. We got a little grabby.
Spoiler, we take them all. We draft every receiver. You have one pick, Val. We'll get to that. Okay, so I'm the Carolina Panthers picking at 7. Isaiah Simmons was my top pick for them. He is off the board. On a team needs basis, Mike, the Panthers need almost every position. I wrote down defensive tackle, cornerback, guard, linebacker, tight end, mascot. I hate their mascot. I went Derrick Brown. the defensive tackle out of Auburn, who's like pretty much the last, I think, like consensus number one at his position. I haven't seen any mocks that have Kinlaw over him or Gallimore. So, I've seen him comp to everyone from Fletcher Cox, which I think is a little bit ambitious, to, Ndamukong Suh, which I think makes a little bit more sense given sort of the power he has, right? And the short area explosiveness. I think the question to me is like, how impactful can he be as a pass rusher? It's like a bit of a question mark, but given how much talent the Panthers have lost, how bad their run defense was last year, it makes sense to me.
Absolutely. He was part of an Auburn defensive line with a couple other guys like Marlon Davidson that are going to be draft picks that I called refrigerators with arms and legs. They were a big, terrifying, absolute nightmare for SEC offensive lines this past year. And Derek Brown, I mean, you turn on the tape, that whole group was a tackle for loss waiting to happen. But the combo of ways, like, he can get moving. He's got great effort towards the ball. Like, he's going to do a lot for you. And if they can continue to surround him with people that put him in favorable spots, if you get him singled up on an interior lineman, it's a wrap. So
I think, yeah, so you and I were talking about kind of like Simmons and would he fall, or, you know, who might he fall to. I don't think Brown falls past 9.
I would agree. Just because Jacksonville also likes horrific interior, especially like a horrific rush defense between the tackles.
Yeah, we'll get there. So back to you at 8. 8 is an interesting spot. So Arizona could go a lot of ways.
They could go a lot of ways. I believe the best way is to protect the guy that you just invested your first pick in the last 2 years in Kyler Murray. And I am going tackle with this one. I'm going the number one tackle off my board. The 8th pick, the Arizona Cardinals select Jedrick Wills, tackle out of Alabama.
The other position I've seen Arizona going for at this point in the draft is wide receiver, which is kind of hilarious. Like, it feels a little like over the top, but there are also rumors that the Chiefs are going to trade up for Henry Ruggs. So that's today's NFL, folks. And I'm not going to lie, like, I love the idea of like a Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb in Cliff Kingsbury's offense, but this is the sensible, correct pick. Mike, only question for you, and I defer to you on all things offensive line, can he play left tackle?
I think so. Jedrick's a 2-year starter at right tackle, which in the Alabama offense, lest we not forget, Tua is a lefty, so he was the blindside protector in this one. And that was on a team where Jonah Williams, their left tackle from last year, was the first overall pick by Cincinnati, who was injured before the season last year. So they get a nice boost from him. But the point being was, it was sort of out of necessity, right? The kid that's playing out there now at Alex Leatherwood is going to be a first rounder next year for Alabama. I think he can make the switch. I know it's a difficult thing, and I told you this yesterday. I don't take that switch for granted, but if anyone could do it, it's him, because he's the cleanest across the board. Like, flipping your fundamentals is tough, and it's a lot tougher for some of these other guys whose fundamentals aren't nearly as up to par as a guy like Jedrick's are. He's the cleanest prospect, I think, tackle-wise in this draft. So he's a no-brainer for me first off the board.
So I'm picking for the Jacksonville Jaguars at 9, another team where the positional need is most positions, a team that has been extremely spicy on the internet today. The funny thing about Jacksonville is, like, if it was any other team, people would be talking about them so much. Like, the stuff with, like, Leonard Fournette coming out and undermining the quarterback, and then there's a trade rumor, and now we've got Yannick Ngakoue going back and forth with Tony Khan about his trade demands. Like, all this is just happening on the internet. It's an extremely this league kind of scenario, but it's Jacksonville, so nobody's really talking about it. They are something, man. It's
amazing, too, because we love making fun of Florida for being crazy, and yet we don't seem to give them that same credit.
Their team, Mel Kiper had wide receiver here, which I mean, they need every position. I wouldn't do that probably. This is not a particularly, it, so basically the entire defense has been imploded, right? Exploded, really. Imploded implies that no one did, and someone did do it. The GM did it. They've been sold off for parts. All of the remains, I think there's like 9 players left from the offense and defense from the 18 roster, but they need every position along the defensive line, arguably linebacker as well. Who knows what's going on there with Jack and such. And I think when Foxers was on, I challenged him to name the Jacksonville cornerbacks because, again, who knows? I gave them Javon Kinlaw from South Carolina. So I think he is correctly being mocked or big boarded below Brown. I actually think he has more potential as a pass rusher, just based out of what I've seen. I think he can one or two gap. I think he is not perfectly polished, and there's definitely a fair amount of downside there. But I think he's the best player available at the position of need.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think one of the biggest differences for him and Brown was, A, you're right, pedigree. It's not like South Carolina and Will Muschamp defenses are bad, but there's just not as much depth and talented depth around him in that one. So he got a lot more attention. You're right, super talented. I mean, he can basically scratch below his knee with his arms just hanging there. He's got freakish sort of levers like that, but great potential. And you're going to a spot there where, yeah, they lost a lot, but it's like it's traditionally been a good D-line room that's gotten people like going in the right directions. Obviously, the Taven Bryant pick didn't work out, and if you had had like a Calais Campbell there as a mentor, it would have been ideal, but I still think it's a spot where he can have some success.
All right, you're up.
All right, 10th overall on the board. Who's actually?
Cleveland.
Oh, it's the Browns. Yeah.
This is easy.
So the Browns are easy. They need tackle help. They needed offensive line help last year. We talked about it a lot. And so second tackle off the board for me. I got to make a lot of the beef picks in this draft, and I was thrilled about it. The Cleveland Browns select Andrew Thomas, tackle out of the University of Georgia.
The Browns are interesting because it's like everybody knows they're going to take a left tackle, right? Like, even if it's not Thomas, whatever. So they're a team that I could see for a sneaky trade up if they feel, because they, if they have like a guy who they want, whether it's Thomas, Becton, you know, Wills, I could see them going up and getting them because I think they know exactly what they need. You know what I mean? And yeah, I love Thomas is like arguably the most plug and play, I think, of the linemen. Again, you would know better than me, but super polished, kind of a can start immediately guy. He switched to left tackle as a sophomore, I want to say, off the top of my head. So he's played both sides, but he has experience.
Yep, because my large adult son, Isaiah Wynn, was at left tackle at that time period.
That's right,
so yeah. I love him and I miss him.
Great pick, no-brainer. All right, welcome to the wide receiver Thunderdome. This is where things get weird. So I'm picking for the Jets at 11, and here's the thing. The Jets could go tackle or wide receiver, right? Like, they obviously need both. So it really comes down to, two of the tackles, and I think it's really likely two of the tackles are off the board at this point because of the two teams that are picking ahead of them. So you get to a point where, okay, do we like, whether it's Wirfs or Becton or even Jones, do we like either of them more than Jerry Jeudy? I just don't see it. I think if you're the Jets, Jeudy is so good and such a can't fail prospect that even though you do need a tackle, you just can't do it. You have to take either him or Lamb, frankly. I gave him Jeudy. I don't know. I just like Sam, you just need that so badly for Sam Darnold as well that I feel like you have to do it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can say his development and that offense there, I mean, what was already a tough offense weapons-wise lost Robbie Anderson too. So you're really, the well is super dry there outside of Le'Veon's weapon. Totally with you on that.
All right, you are up next with a team that also, is there any universe in which the Raiders don't go wide receiver here?
I don't think so. Like, I think there's a world, I think in Mel's latest mock, he had them taking C.J. Henderson. So like, you could go defensive back
at
there.
At 11.
Yeah, he had them going, I think in the last one, in mock 4.0 for Mel, he went C.J. Henderson.
C.J.'s been a riser.
Yeah, people are in love with that athleticism, right? There's so much freaking ability there. But
well, that's the other position, cornerback or edge for them, that I could see them going.
Yeah. Yep, which, like you said, 90% of the league needs cornerback and offensive line help in some way, shape, or form. But them probably higher than most. But I'm not going there. I'm going to continue our run on wide receivers. And since you already snatched Jeudy, who I did want for this offense, I'll go CeeDee Lamb next out of Oklahoma. The rack god, as I like to call him.
All right, so we've talked a lot about Lamb and Judy on this pod. 13, I'm picking for the San Francisco 49ers, and I could also take a wide receiver here. I could take Henry Ruggs. I don't even like, that's not my ideal fit for them. I think I'm picking for them later. But anyways, or I could address another area of need, and that's what I'm going to do. I am delighted that CJ Henderson, Florida cornerback, is still available here. The DB position opposite Richard Sherman has obviously been an area of need in San Francisco, something they've not been able to solve despite making numerous substitutions and changes over the course of the season, battled some injuries as well. Henderson, I think at this point, is pretty blatantly the number two prospect. To me, like the tape, if you want to watch him, if you want a reason to pick him and feel like, okay, he could be the next Marcus Peters or something, or that's a good comp, watch him go up against Ja'Marr Chase, right? Because I think Chase had like two, he scored a touchdown, but he only had like two catches, I want to say, in that game. And, that's when he really caught my eye last year. He is physical. He is fast. He is a ball hack. He does not love tackling, but he can play man. He's got the size. He's the length. So yeah, I guess Greedy Williams is a better comp for him than Marcus Peters. When I think about because
I was gonna say, which I mean, you know, defensive backs, like when they do tackle, it's a luxury. Like Okuda's a luxury because he actually will do that sometimes.
Don't listen, everyone Dominique. Yeah. Shots fired.
Shield your. By the way, San Fran is interesting. As of Monday, when we're recording this, we saw the Adam Schefter reports that they're, you know, actively taking calls on 13 and 31 as far as potentially moving back. Because after 31, they don't have a pick until the fifth round.
That is fascinating. They're clearly going to trade down. All right, 15. You're John Elway. You are thrilled. Oh no, you're 14. I'm John Elway. Sorry, I skipped ahead again. All right, sorry. You are not John Elway. You are Jason Licht of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes, and I am trying to make sure that I protect the 40-plus-year-old quarterback that we just brought down. Don't know if you've heard of him. Kind of like that Last Dance documentary. This guy's a bit of an unheralded prospect and Tom Brady, but I'm going to protect him with my next. I am 3 for 3 on beef picks here. I want to get weird. This is some people. This is super polarizing prospect. I'm going to go Mekhi Becton out of Louisville.
First of all, his name's Tampa Bay. So please refer to him by his given name. The Bucks are another team, I think, similar to the Browns, where everyone assumes they're going to go tackle. And if they like a guy, I could see them trading up. You know what I mean? Just because that's the position they want. So, yeah, makes perfect sense. Another team I think where, and I'm picking at 15, I'm John Elway. And I'm thrilled because I want a player. Everybody knows I want him. And by the grace of God, he is there. And that's Henry Ruggs.
Yes.
Who has been linked to the Broncos in Elway for quite some time now. However, Chiefs threw a curveball today with this trade rumor, which is just so delightful. I'm trying to think, like, can you think of an offense in NFL history that would look like what the Chiefs would look like if they actually drafted Henry Ruggs?
Oh, no. That's another one that, like the Patriots at somehow getting up to 13 and getting Tua, if this happens, we might as well give up. Like, Vegas should shut off the odds on the Super Bowl for next year.
Well, I just don't know how you defend that. Because again, it's not, and I've always been saying this with Henry Ruggs. I've been saying I feel like people are overestimating him because they think he can be Tyreek Hill. And I'm like, well, but Tyreek Hill is Patrick Mahomes. But what if Henry Ruggs also had Patrick Mahomes?
Galaxy
it's not okay.
Brain.
It's not okay. Okay, but yeah, I got him going to Denver. They've got a number one in Cortland Sutton. They need a downfield threat for Drew Lock, who they like, and I think they have reason to like. There's still a lot of question marks around him, but it makes a ton of sense. Let's take a quick break. Life today is kind of a lot. It forces us to always be on, but every now and then it's important to just stop,
Crack open a Mountain Cold Coors Light and chill. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's made to chill. Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment. Made to chill. Coors Light is brewed with a 3-step cold process. Cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's actually made to chill. The mountains on Coors Light's cold activated bottles and cans turn blue when they are chilled to perfection. Born in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102 calories. That's why Coors Light is the one to choose when you need a moment of chill. So when you want to reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
As always, thank you so much for your delightful iTunes reviews and the questions you've left therein. We'll just take a few of them right now. Mike, are you happy to take some?
Ready to do it. Let's go.
All right. This is my favorite question ever. Cobra Ice asks, I am a 16-year-old New York Giants fan, and I think I could run the team better than Dave Gettleman.
Oh.
What would you have done in free agency, and what would you do with the draft? Well, we already talked about what we do in the draft. The thing that befalls me about the Giants free agency is I really thought they would go big on a pass rusher, like a Clowney or something. They had a ton of cap space, too.
Well, especially the way the market for Clowney's gone, right? Like a late surge on that when his price has gone down so much would have been, I don't know, would have made an abundant amount of sense. And he's sort of a hog molly. He's like a mid-hog molly, like a tweener.
Yeah. Huh.
Maybe he's just a molly, not a hog.
So I was trying to think of something like that. What if Gettleman just shocks us and is like, actually, I'm taking Henry Ruggs or something. Rubber Chicken Zero has a question. Oh, this is long. This is another great. I love my questions so much. Why do NFL analysts like you and Barnwell, etc., seem compelled to always use both the first and last names when discussing an NFL player? Other sports. I think when you compare Derek Jeter to Barry Bonds or Tony Gwynn, you'll see Jeter was nowhere near the hitter that Bonds or Gwynn was. Mina, when you compare Aaron Rodgers to Drew Brees, you see that Aaron Rodgers is higher ceiling than Drew Brees. Is there a patient zero of talking this way? Similarly to how Mel Kiper infected a generation of football people with the habit of talking in the second person. Do you do that?
I think so. Like, well, my thing is I had to break out of the habit of referring to every player as a number, because when I was always going up against guys, I never really bothered with names. I always went by jersey number. And once I started doing this, I had to start doing names. And so I think I overcompensated with both.
Maybe what we should innovate is like on The Bachelor, how if two guys have the same name, you become Ben C or Ben H.
Oh, like I love this.
Drew B. is quarterback for the Saints. You know what's really tripping me about the draft this year is how many like sons there are and cousins.
Oh my God.
I'm okay with the cousins. What I'm not okay with is Antoine Winfield Jr. I'm just not okay with that. Moss kid. I can't handle it.
Yeah, Thaddeus. No, this is going to mess a lot of people up. Like, we're having the moment where like my dad would always see me playing against his former teammates' kids, and now we're watching guys that we watched kids come up through it, and I don't like feeling old. It's not my place.
So upsetting. Natty Pro asks, he says, Mina reps, or she says, Mina reps Seattle hardcore, but has never once praised grunge or Starbucks. Are you secretly a Seattle poser? So, on the grunge note, my brother was like heavy into Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, Nirvana. So, and because my brother controlled all content in our house, I had to listen to all that stuff constantly. So I think as a result, I grew to resent it. Although I do think Nirvana is very good. I don't like Starbucks because I have trash coffee taste. I mean, I really fancy coffee. People think Starbucks is trash. I think anything that doesn't have a ton of milk and sugar in it is trash.
Oh, so like when we were doing that internet wheel of which coffee do you drink with the number, you were closer to the one that looks just like milk?
Oh, yeah. Not really, because that wheel was absurd. I'm not an elitist when it comes to coffee. I'll leave it at that. Okay, last question is from Jordan, a frequent question leaver, I've noticed. He asks, could the lack of access to prospects for physicals lead to an increase in trades for future draft picks in exchange for trading down? Teams putting a premium in picks they'll have better information for. That's interesting.
I had this exact discussion with Jason Fitz like 2 hours ago because he was of that same opinion. I actually go opposite on this one. I think that this year, teams that know what they're doing, that have been actively working on ways to find information about prospects that the lazy teams are going to miss on, I think those teams are going to have an absolute field day in the middle of this draft. And I think we're going to see a bunch of names called that might be shocking at first, but are going to be emblematic of really good teams. The better teams in the league that we all know and think of that are sound front office teams are going to absolutely go off in those middle rounds.
I'm so ready for the Seahawks to reach on an offensive tackle. Probably like, whatever. Okay. Back to the draft. We're going to go quicker. Cause shocker, I have not managed the clock well. You're picking next, Mike. You are number 16. You are the Atlanta Falcons. You took a pick here that kind of surprised me.
Yeah, the Atlanta Falcons. I went an edge rusher. I went AJ Epinesa out of Iowa. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. I always mess it up.
You gave it a little flair. I was impressed. Yes. So that's surprising to people because I have not seen many boards where he is the number one pass rusher.
No, and so this was the interesting part, and I fully give credit our friend and former colleague and Cynthia Freeland over at the NFLNet does an analytics mock where if the goal was to just up your win total for the 2020 season, who would be the best fit? Now, in her mock, Chaseon was already off the board to the Jets, but Epinesa was not far behind in that model for what he does to the win total for either team, really. And I looked at it and I said this from like a just a kind of human perspective on the Falcons. They have basically gone after the Chaseon type, meaning extremely fluid athlete, high upside guy in multiple iterations at end, and it has not worked in a while. Like, I look at from Vic Beasley on to Tack McKinley and say, you have attacked a type and you have failed, and I understand it fits your defense. Why not go for a guy who's a little more of a tweener? He's got some three technique to him, and he's put that on tape. Who's, I think, a little more stout, a little more polished, and just gives you something that's a bit different. Like, I think he's a good guy. He got talked about a lot more towards the end of, you know, at the end of football season, not at the end of draft season. So that was why I was comfortable with the reach. But all credit to Cynthia. Once I saw that mock, I was like, you know what? Maybe I will go back and look at that. And sure enough, I liked what I saw.
Yeah, I think your point about sort of the Falcons' mistakes in the past is really well taken here, because Epinesa is that sort of not plus athlete. You know, he's not like the most athletic guy, but he's like the technician, right? I think the more polished rusher. I actually think too, if he bulked up a bit, you could move him around the line a bit more, right? He probably projects
huge frame, 100%.
Like right now he's a 4-3 end, but I think you could move him around. It's an interesting pick. I did, so in my separate mock draft from this mock draft, my first one, I had them taking Chaseon. I have them going pass rusher. But yeah, I was intrigued. It was an interesting pick. Okay. So I'm picking at number 17. I am thrilled, frankly, with how the board shook out on my behalf. Because I am the Dallas Cowboys. And with the 17th overall pick in our mock draft, I'm taking Christian Fulton, the DB out of LSU. Cornerback, obviously an area of need for the Dallas Cowboys. I just want to read you a stat. This is courtesy of PFF that I just found yesterday. Against T. Higgins, Jerry Jeudy, and Henry Ruggs, Christian Fulton has allowed 3 catches for 39 yards.
Wow.
No touchdowns. Dude has been tested by the best. He has played different schemes. He can play press. He can play off. The measurables are not off the charts, but I think like a Dallas team that wants a guy to come in and start and is not rebuilding, I think he is the perfect pick.
No, I love this one. I think he's one that probably slipped in a lot of people's minds just because when we all like geeked out over LSU's defense, we were looking opposite him at the number one corner in 2 years in Derek Stingley Jr., who is an absolute freak as a true freshman.
But he's, you're so right, distracting.
Like, I was gonna say we all salivated him, but quietly Christian Fulton was just doing what you described. So yeah, I love this one.
All right. Here you are again. Back on your BS.
Yes. Oh my God. All right. Well, first off, let the record show that I initially botched this in our text exchange because I'm an idiot and I misplaced a guy who for a lot of people is the top prospect at this position. I am the Miami Dolphins with our second pick in the first round. I am going to protect our newly acquired Tua Tagovailoa with Tristan Wirfs, tackle out of Iowa.
Dolphins could really go like every direction, right?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, so they need the new Tunsil. I guess that would be my question for you. Do you think, so Wirfs is one where he played predominantly right tackle, I believe, in college, right?
Moved over to left some because they had an injury to their other starter who's going to be another high draft pick at some point soon. But
so my question for you is, what position should he play? Is he a left tackle or right tackle, or is he actually a guard, which is something you hear a lot when it comes to
that? I don't think Tristan is a guard just because right now his problem is just refining everything. Like, I think the beauty of that, and Kirk Ferentz, we talked to on Golic and Wingo one day, kind of said he is in the mold of any of the great tackles that you've seen come out of Iowa, and there have been plenty. He's just still pretty green in the process. Like, all the top tackle prospects are juniors leaving this year. And Tristan's the one who maybe technically could have benefited the most from another year of coaching at that level, but he's so physically gifted. Like, the stories about him around the Iowa weight room are world famous at this point. He's got every gift under the sun, which is why tons of mocks have him as the first tackle off the board, but I think you're going to have to do a little coaching up here, which is why I have him going the fourth tackle, but I think he's still a guy you could mold to either side, but he is a phenomenal athlete. I think he should play tackle.
So I'm picking yet again. I picked Raiders first time, right? No, I didn't. You did. Okay. Well, I am now inhabiting the body of Mike Mayock, and I'm thrilled because I love blue chip prospects. I love guys from schools that go deep into the college football playoffs, and Clavin Chaisson out of LSU, I said his name right just to make sure I didn't mess it up, is still available. And if I'm the Raiders, I think this is a great spot to take a pass rusher generally. I think DB is also a potential pick there, and they still need another edge rusher, even though I like some of their picks over the last few years. The elusive Khalil Mack spot is open, even though they did get a bit more of a pass rush last year. And yeah, I'm who took Epinesa? You with what team? Oh, the Falcons took him, yeah, in our draft. Yeah, I'm delighted that he's still here. He is explosive. He has the physical to. I feel like I'm starting to lean on like all the cliches, but they're true.
No, they are 100% true with him. Absolutely.
It's also just like the typical like stuff where it's like explosive, athletic, you know, the pass rush moves are still being worked on. He had a pretty bad injury in 2018. He tore his ACL. So that's been a bit of a question mark, but he was an absolute monster in the Bama game, which is one of the ones that I rewatched. And yeah, I think he's perfect.
He has got scary bend. His best football is all so far. And he's so different than the guys they took last year at pass rusher. So I actually kind of love that pick.
All right. Step back up to the plate, Jaguars.
Yeah, this is where we get weird. Jaguars select Justin Jefferson, wide receiver, LSU.
This is a really weird pick.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
Well, I figure, like, obviously, rumors of his demise aside, of Leonard Fournette suggesting that they should take a quarterback there, if you're going to take a serious look at Gardner Minshew, I think you load up on some weapons, and I look down the board at the next receivers here, and I think Justin Jefferson, a guy that's probably not getting talked about a bunch. I saw Matt Bowen breaking him down on Twitter, who does great stuff for us, and it was just a reminder, like, in an offense where, yeah, you know, Jamar Chase is obviously a guy we freak out about next year, like, Justin Jefferson's crazy versatile and did a ton of damage for them in the slot, and I think would be a very interesting weapon to pair with a quarterback that you're trying to get a read on. And at the very least, he's going to be great for whoever plays quarterback with you.
Yeah, he's like a quarterback's best friend. That was my takeaway from going back and rewatching him and Burrow. They're just so like they have a mind meld going, right? And he's a slot receiver, so he has to make all these little adjustments in the middle of the field on these option routes, and he's so good at anticipating exactly where Burrow needs to go with the football. Now, I think part of the reason you don't hear that he's kind of not being talked about in the same group, but certainly as the top three, is just the physical ceiling, yep, and the fact that he's a slot receiver. But guess what? slot receivers are important in the modern NFL. And they've got Chark. So, I mean, shoot, whatever quarterback comes into that room with Jefferson and Chark, is that's a great situation. All right. So I'm the Philadelphia Eagles. Everybody knows I'm going to take a quarterback. I've seen Jefferson mock to them a bit. I've seen pretty much every quarterback mock to the Eagles. My friend Adam Lefko really wants them to take a burner. The problem is Ruggs is off the board, which is why really the Eagles should just trade down and take like Rager, maybe take two shots at wide receiver at this point if Ruggs is off the board. I'm taking Denzel Mims here.
Mims!
I think he's a little bit duplicative with Alshon Jeffrey, but I think Alshon Jeffrey's on his way out at some point in the near future. And I think it's funny because I mentioned DJ Chark. My comp for Mims is halfway between Josh Gordon and DJ Chark. I think he has, after the first two, I think he has the greatest potential of any of the wide receivers. I think he is a true X. Didn't get to do a lot in that Baylor offense. And he was one who, you know, came to the Senior Bowl and shredded against just, you know, there was the questions, oh, what routes can he run? He's a limited tree. How agile is he? And he kind of answered them all with a vengeance. The tape doesn't always show that. But for the potential you get with him, I think it's just tremendous.
Absolutely. Big frame. Every time I think of him, he's catching a back shoulder fade again. So he did that like it was going out of style in there. Totally. I definitely like that.
Body control.
Definitely like that fit. Yes, unreal. Him and like T. Higgins are the body control all-stars of this draft.
Which I have such a bias towards generally. All right, you are picking next. You are 22. You are the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, and you know what? The more and more I think about this one, I'm probably going to regret not going corner on this one. Like, obviously, they overhauled a lot of that defense there. At pass rusher, certainly, with Xavier leaving at the corner spot, although his play had declined so much, that was probably a necessary evil. But I went wide receiver. I went Brandon Ayuk out of Arizona State.
I don't know about this one, man.
He's interesting. So he's one I started seeing his name mocked near the first round or in the first round in some of like Mel and Todd's ones. And so I went back and looked. Like, they had a true freshman quarterback at Arizona State, so the offense was kind of a growth project over the course of the season that hit its high watermark when they beat Oregon and had that one. But this kid, like, sneaky gadget guy, like, you can use him in multiple ways, isn't a burner, but can separate after he's got the ball in his hands, like, unbelievable length in all this one. And I feel like he could be a chance at doing the things that you thought Laquon Treadwell might do. And obviously there's a Diggs hole there now. Like, he's not going to do the same things that Thielen's going to do. So to your point before, he's not redundant. So I don't know. Just, it seemed like an interesting swing to potentially take here on a spot that I think they need more help than we give credit for right now.
I think they need, I would definitely consider taking a receiver there. He's just below a few other guys on my board who come up later in our draft. I think he is extreme. He's like a big play waiting to happen. Problem is, I'm not sure he's strong enough to make that happen in the NFL. So we'll see. I don't know. He could be huge. All right, let's get to the real drama.
Oh yeah.
I'm the New England Patriots. I'm Bill Belichick. I'm wearing my jeans, my tight jeans in my house like a normal person. Camera's not on them this time though. And, I was about to say like a really bad, I'm very excited because Justin Herbert is still there.
Woo!
And I'm going to take him and I'm going to teach him how to get past his first read. So as I mentioned, I watched a fair amount of Herbert this weekend and I think I texted this to you. Like, my issue with him is I'll watch an entire game, right? And I can't, like, I've probably gone back and watched four or so games at this point in my prep outside of watching him during the regular season. And I can count on the number of times I said, whoa, on one hand. And I feel like that's insufficient for a first round pick. I think in his defense, and this was sort of my big takeaway from rewatching, he is way more athletic than I remembered. He's got Josh Allen running ability. And that defense is dog crap. Or offense, rather, it's so unpleasant to watch. Like, it's just, it's like the worst iteration of the Seahawks offense. I don't know. And I think a lot of quarterbacks would have been hamstrung by that, coupled with his receivers who are not good. So I see why NFL GMs are looking at that offense and the talent and the physical tools and saying, yeah, if you take him outside of all those things, I could turn him into something. Who better to do that than Bill Belichick?
Honestly, like, this is the ultimate example of, we all say all the things that we've said about him, but if he wound up in New England, we go, oh, okay, so he's going to start there for 10 years and be great. Yeah, exactly. It's there. They can do no wrong, especially at this spot. It's unbelievable.
Okay, you're next. We got to quicken the pace here.
Yep, trying to make it hum a little bit here. All right, you want Justin Herbert there. I am the New Orleans Saints at 24, and since he is still on the board, I'm going to take Patrick Queen, linebacker out of LSU here, which I think is a home run for these guys. He is the most instinctive linebacker in this draft. Rangy guy, certainly good pedigree in that linebacker room. This one's a no-brainer for them.
I love it. The hometown kid. I think there's a little concern because the, you know, like, he got so much better as his college career went on, and then I think, like, peaked at the perfect time in the national championship. But the way in which he peaked, the awareness, the coverage ability, his ability to read quarterbacks, that stuff you can't teach. How reactive he was. You and I think we were talking about how he's like Kwon Alexander, but at times, and this is kind of a weird comp, he actually reminded me a little bit of Corey Littleton on the Rams.
Wow.
He just kind of, I don't know. He's just so good at reading the field. And I think it's a perfect fit for the New Orleans Saints, given their needs, which are small. All right, I'm next. Good job, good pick. I'm picking for the Vikings again. So we already went receiver for them. So this time, I'm going to go cornerback, because those are sort of the two areas of the obvious areas of need. Oh, wait, no. Did you go corner? No, you went receiver.
No, them, right? I went receiver. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So this is probably a controversial pick. And I think I tweeted this, the guy you're higher on than other people. I'm taking Jalen Johnson out of Utah.
You love this kid. I remember you tweeting about him the other day.
And if I am accusing people of being overly biased for Patrick Queen because of the national championship, like, Jalen Johnson basically dominated the Washington Huskies, who are the football team that I root for. And as a result, I think I'm probably overly biased towards him. But I've, like, listened to some interviews with him. He's such a smart cornerback. He's so, and you saw that in that game, the interception. God, the pick six. He's so advanced, I guess, is, you know, and I think the physical stuff isn't great. He's not the longest, I think, or he doesn't have the highest athletic ceiling, and he has flaws. But I think where he is as a player is ahead of the other DBs who are below him, who we'll be considering at this position. He's just 6 feet tall.
Is he really? Oh, wow. I think, but to your point, it's kind of like, this is also the weird dance of this offseason where you've got less time. And so in theory, right, having a player like that, that is such a, like, master's class and playing the position might be a huge benefit for a rookie coming into this kind of uncertain time.
Who you got next?
Dolphins with our third pick in the first round going Xavier McKinney, safety out of Alabama. Another one that, like, this guy lasting till this point, scoop up, enjoy, like, we know you missed the last time around as far as Alabama defensive backs in Miami. We won't let that happen again.
Yeah, I mean, we talk so much about Isaiah Simmons playing every position, but so did McKinney.
Yes.
In that defense. He almost has gotten kind of forgotten for how multiple he was. And I think that Dolphins defense that you just put together already has one of the best secondaries in the NFL. My goodness. I have a comp for him as a young Malcolm Jenkins. I don't know if that's going to hold up, but yeah, I was just trying to think of, like, who he reminded me of, you know, just in terms of his coverage ability. I don't know if that, like, that's exactly how I would use him in particular, given the DBs that the Dolphins already have. But I don't know. It seems like a no-brainer.
No, I'm with you. I think super versatile piece, and you're right, like having the safety net of that secondary and like a defensive-minded head coach and Brian Flores, who comes from a system who loves versatile pieces, step right up.
Yeah, right. He's right. He doesn't have like that crazy, you know, like Earl Thomas-like range, but I don't think he needs it necessarily in this defense. Okay, so I'm picking for the Seattle Seahawks 27. I was debating between the edge rushers who are available, not the sexiest class. The remaining offensive tackles, Josh Jones was still on the board here. And then I noticed that Cesar Ruiz, the Michigan center, who's, I believe, like the only interior offensive lineman that most people have being mocked in the first round, was what, like Cushenberry maybe after him? Anyways, he was still on the board. The Seahawks, I think, could stand to upgrade or at least draft an heir pretty much at every position along the offensive line. Justin Britt is on the last year of his deal. I think they've shown signs of being ready to move on. I defer to you on sort of analyzing, I guess, his pro readiness. But I saw that he had played both guard and center, which was intriguing to me. But it seemed like an area of need for Seattle.
It does, and he reminds me a lot because this is not like a super top, like you said, it's sort of a lackluster interior class overall, but he reminds me a lot of a guy that I played with for a little bit, Nick Martin, who's the center for the Texans now, Zach Martin's younger brother, who's going to be a decade-long pro, is already on his second contract. Very clean guy, doesn't maybe blow you away with any one thing, feet get tied up a little bit, but in general, especially for Seattle, you need clean and you need dependable on the inside of the pocket to try and give Russ more of a chance than he's had.
I'll take it. All right, you're up next.
All right, 28. We're going to go to Baltimore, and I get to pick linebacker again. I'll go Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma, who I think the clear number two, and you mentioned it, all of like the best parts of Patrick Queen, like the instinctiveness and that, is where Murray suffers a little bit. He's a physical freak. He was one of the few bright spots of that Oklahoma defense, but he's just a step slow at times.
Yeah, I think he has more impressive like range and athleticism, perhaps, but he also makes more mistakes and fails to read the play, I think, and it shows up in a big way sometimes. But I think this is, again, one of those teams where you can bring in a guy who's like a little bit raw and, you know, can stand to learn from some really talented players around him. Okay, I'm picking at 29. I love this pick. I'm the Tennessee Titans. I have a few areas that I could attack. Edge rusher, linebacker. I decided to get a guy who could really do all of that in Zach Bond. I'm thrilled because I want to be the Patriots, and he is Kyle Van Noy Jr. And I'm the Titans. That's why I want to be the Patriots. I think the biggest question with Bond, Mike, is just kind of where he'll play football, right? Because I could see him being used like a litany of ways in the NFL, similarly to Van Noy. I could see him playing off ball. I could see him being used primarily on the edge, and so I'll be curious to see. I think the Titans also are uniquely equipped to do that with him, sort of given that defense, so I really like the fit.
Yeah, they have created the Patriots linebacker room, right? Like, if teams assume the identity of their coach, this team has gone all in on Mike Vrabel just drafting himself over and over again.
All right, you've got the Packers.
Yeah, I got the Packers. I went wide out for this one with Aaron, and I went Michael Pittman out of USC.
I've seen mocked to the Niners now in almost every draft. So the Niners are pissed in this scenario.
Yeah, no, he's a guy that, like, now we're getting into the range of like him and some of like the big bodied wide receivers, like Pittman of the group of USC guys was the big one, 6'4", moved around a little bit, but just like a big, strong dude that can do a lot of different things for them. I just think he's like a dependable guy that like fits well. You talk about a personality fit, like not everybody can go and play wide receiver for Aaron Rodgers. We've watched him eat rookies alive in the recent years.
So I am picking for the Niners, and I'm deeply distraught that Pittman's off the board in this scenario, I guess. But then I remembered that another big-bodied, strong wide receiver is still available. A guy who I think until maybe the last month or so, a lot of people thought would go even higher, and that's T. Higgins. I think that's, you know, the Niners are interesting because that wide receiver, everyone's looking at the Packers and Niners and kind of mocking wide receiver to them. I've been thinking about like what kind of wide receiver does San Francisco need, right? Like who would be complementary to the offense they're already building. And I do think they need a contested catch guy, a guy who's going to just go up and get the football, you know, in the red zone. And, you know, maybe not the best separator, but somebody with a sort of a impressive catch radius, and Higgins is that guy.
Definitely. And I think like the thing that was most problematic for him when they got the better competition was getting off press, right? Like Jeff Okudah and the Ohio State guys punched them in the chest and ruined them. And you can say the same to an extent to LSU. Kyle's going to scheme creative ways to get him open. Like he's going to help him overcome that at the beginning because you've got the ultimate security blanket in that OC, or head coach, I mean.
All right. Your last.
All right. The Kansas City Chiefs are proud to welcome running back DeAndre Swift out of... I wanted so badly just to torpedo the side of your podcast ship. We're going to take Trevon Diggs, corner out of Alabama.
It's funny because until this Ruggs rumor, I think this is another one where everyone's like, they're going to take a corner, right? Like, they're obviously going to take a corner. Because that's just the most obvious. When Dominique and I did team needs, I was like, mostly teams you could go either way, but like Kansas City is like kind of a no-brainer. They need a cornerback. Diggs is an interesting one. I think he's been a dropper, right? Whereas like your Hendersons have been rising, your Fultons, I think Gladney. Diggs has been dropping a little bit. I think some of that has to do with the tackling, perhaps. But I think coming out of that Bama defense, he is like probably more likely than some of the other, like a Johnson, to play immediately.
Yep, I will give you kind of akin to the stat that you brought up before with Christian Fulton. When he was the primary defender in 2019, he allowed a 30% completion percentage, the third lowest in the FBS and the best in the SEC. He allowed a QBR of 13 as the primary defender in coverage. Like, think about what he just went up against every day in practice, right? Like, right. Him and Xavier McKinney, like, we had him on the show this morning, and Trevon Diggs was talking about in practice having to defend Tua throwing legit no-look passes and trying to explain that to Nick Saban, in addition to the freak show cast of wideouts. So, dudes, his best college tape is probably what they have on 7-on-7 from the summers in Alabama.
That's funny. And yeah, the Chiefs secondary, like, the defense is pretty complex scheme, so I think you'd want a guy like him who knows how to play zone really well. He can play different styles, and even though he did switch positions, I think at some point in his college career,
he came in as a wide receiver,
like his bro. But yeah, I think he's a great fit for them. All right, we are done. We're gonna wrap with some quick questions for Michael Jr.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
There's been a lot of jokes about, like, the tech stuff and the draft and, you know, like, Dave Gettleman's computer and all that. What is the funniest thing that could happen?
The funniest thing, I think, was what we got a preview of today. You saw all of Diana Rossini's tweets about what was going on and the idea of all of them having the phone lines open on the conference call that every GM's going to be in on, and it just being Roger Goodell getting an earful of all these coaches mumbling like your dad trying to operate Zoom for the first time.
Question two, you introduced a concept to me that I think you should trademark called airport time, which I mentioned, I think it started because I was like, oh, it's like 5 and I already want to eat dinner or something. And you were saying, well, we're all living in airport time where none of the rules apply. You can just eat a meal whenever you want. What is the most shameful time you've eaten dinner during the quarantine?
The most shameful time I've eaten? Well, like which dinner? Like the problem is I eat multiples, right? So like I eat multiple dinners sometimes. You get hungry early and you eat a dinner at like 4 and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, like it's 8 o'clock again. I'm going to eat another. The most shameful thing I did was I bought ice cream to eat for breakfast on Saturday morning and I got so drunk Friday night. I just looked in the freezer like, hey, big head, and then pulled it out and ate half the ice cream then.
I don't know what to say. If you were a GM, so we've been getting all these pictures of like the different setups, you know, you got your John Lynch, your high tech, like multiple computers. What would you like throw in your setup? Like you know what I mean? To like let the people know.
Spice it up a little bit. Lava lamp. Easy one. Timeless. It's a little bit futuristic still. Shows I like to party and have a good time. Lava lamp. Next question.
People who follow my Twitter know that I watched all four seasons of Halt and Catch Fire during the quarantine. Highly recommend. What is something you have binged or watched that you would recommend?
Well, I have never watched The Office from start to finish. And so much like Ryan Clark, our colleague who's been live tweeting it, I've been going back through, I'm in like the middle of season four right now, and I'm always a very pro Parks and Rec guy when it comes to the debate. So this is me kind of doing, kind of like what you did with Justin Herbert. I'm doing my research on the series that I've always said is the lesser of the two.
Interesting. All right. Last question is from Lenny, but, it's a question for you, but it feels like it's more about me. Mike, I watched the Jordan documentary last night and I realized something. I haven't been getting paid for any of this. Am I the Scottie Pippen of the Mina Kimes show featuring Lenny? What? That's not okay.
Oh boy. I feel like I need to leave the room right now. I'm not going to do the Michael Jordan and call Lenny selfish, but I think this is something you guys, does this make you, by the way, the Jerry Krause of this situation?
No, I'm the Jordan.